Tune in, it's time for Comedy G. Bringing stars and stories, it's where you wanna be. From celebs to entrepreneurs, she's got the scoop. Community and entertainment, she's in the loop. Every smile, a burst of velvet light. Through the screen, she shines so bright. With the laughs and tales that weave tonight. Well, 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 welcome to another episode of SKST Radio, and you tuned in to the Cami Grayson Show. And today I have a very special guest. I actually met
week and a half ago.
And so he goes by the name of
Irvin Legend.
Irvin Legend. Yeah. Okay, so Irvin is like you see this big beautiful belt right here, right? So he does all this wrestling stuff and all this, and we're going to find out what it's like to be a wrestler. We're going to learn the ins and outs and how he got here, you know, because this guy has an interesting story. Not only does he do the wrestling and carries a belt with all these cool little icons on here, we'll find out what these are as well and how he got those. But first of all, Irvin, tell people who you are and how you got started.
So, as you stated, my name is Irvin Legend. I'm a professional wrestler. I also do motivational speaking. Now, the story about me is I was born in Chicago. My birth mother was a drug abuser. She abused cocaine. So, when I was born, I was about a pound. So, I'm not so sure how many weeks I was, but I was really, really early.
Wow.
And then I was battling cerebral palsy, asthma, mild brain damage, and epilepsy.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
And I think the biggest battle I had was epilepsy, because that's neurological. That affects like your vision, your balance, your learning. She pretty much, you know, gave birth to me, threw me away.
Oh.
Somebody found me, took me to the hospital. I was in the hospital about 6 months. And then my foster mom from Cardiff, Wales, that's in the UK. Mm-hmm. She adopted me. Now, at the time, I don't know how it is now, but a elderly white lady adopting a sick black baby was almost unheard of, especially in my area in Chicago. So she took me, and I only had her till I was about 14.
Oh, wow.
When I was 14, she passed away, and that's when I got involved into gangs. Mm. Because I was looking for the support and the love that my mom gave me. And now that I did not have her, now I didn't have no direction. I also don't know my birth dad, so that was another problem. So I was in the gang from the time I was 14 and a half to about 17.
Wow. That's amazing.
That brings me to my next thing. Gang banging is not good. I can sympathize for everybody who participates, but there's always a way out. I mean, unfortunately for me, I found a way out. But it didn't come without a cost. I did get stabbed, and I did get shot.
Just to get out?
Well, that's because I was in the streets trapping, and people tried to kill me. What you call ops nowadays, those mm-hmm. are opposition, those are enemies. They got me. The gang knew what I was trying to do, and I was trying to make myself, you know, be something. So they still kind of gave me, like, the side eye, but they didn't, like, opt me out. So I actually moved my foster sister. Gave me an ultimatum. She said, either you can keep gang banging and get killed out here, or you can move with me and move to Virginia Beach.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a very easy decision for me to move. I jumped on a bus from Chicago to Norfolk, and then my sister picked me up from the Norfolk bus stop.
Wow.
And wow. I've been back to Chicago a few times, but not for that reason.
Yeah. So how long ago has this been?
I moved in with my sister when I was about 17.
17.
Wow. So I'm 32 now, so I've been here since I was 17.
Wow.
The last time I went to Chicago was to go to my cousin's funeral. And King Vaughn's my cousin. I found that out through a DNA test where you sign up online and they send you the kit. You spit in a cup, you mail it out. I found out he's my cousin through my birth mom's side. It sucks I never got it. You know, we actually used to, like, kick it, but as friends, we didn't know we were related.
Related. Okay.
So like he never knew, and you know, obviously he passed away in 2020, so I never got to tell him. So I mean, it's cool because I listen to his music, but yeah, it's funny how stuff
works. So you've had a tragic life, I want to say. You've been through a whole lot. And so how do you keep it together?
Honestly, the gym saved my life and bodybuilding. I got into bodybuilding because I was bullied because of my size, my skin color, and my upbringing. And, you know, I got everything from thrown down the stairs, mustard packets thrown at me, got called, you know, racial terms. I even got hate from my own people. So, like, from their side, they looked at me, oh, he's with white people. And then I got hate from that side, oh, he's black, he's nothing. So I was getting attacked by
both ways, yeah.
And it just got to the point where I was like, I was about 15 when I did my first suicide attempt. And I was getting bullied in school. And then 18 was my next one.
Yeah. So you were little. So you mentioned that you were smaller and you were sickly. And so that's, I guess, why people thought that they can bully you around. Because
yeah,
you
they so thought cool. I wouldn't do nothing. And that's why I went in the ring. I fight with such rage because that 30 years of pain comes out. So whoever I'm in the ring with, I don't think they stand a chance.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how big they are. I've been fighting people bigger my whole life. So that size don't mean nothing.
You sound like, what is it, Sophia? All my life I had to fight.
Yeah, I was actually looking for that clip the other day. I couldn't find it because I was like, man, I need to watch that. My friend showed me, like, I can't find it for life. Man, it was on TikTok and YouTube somewhere. But yeah,
it's amazing. You know, I listened to your story and I was real excited to get you here because I know that the things that you've gone through, you're not the only one. It might seem like it, but I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that need to hear your story so they can know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Right.
And that's my thing. Now you're actually a motivational speaker and you're out there and you're doing things. In fact, that's where how I met you,
right.
You know, giving out these gold nuggets, you know, of wisdom, letting people know that it's not over after that. You can keep going and keep going and keep going. So, man, my hat's off to you. Wait a minute. This is what you're supposed to do, right? Thank hats you. Off to you.
My biggest thing that I tap in on, because it's not talked about enough, and, you know, this is not a color thing, but as a black man, we are, for some reason, we're groomed to not show emotion, no matter how much pain we're in. And that's like the number one cause of suicide attempts, even for me. Like, it becomes unbearable. So I'm telling every man, and every woman out there, every child, mm-hmm. It's okay to cry. You know what I'm saying? It's okay to let out and share your story. Seek help because you're not alone. You know what I'm saying? Like I was in the worst circumstances and I found wrestling as well through bodybuilding. That's how I discovered wrestling. So, you know, taking the life isn't worth it. A permanent way out of temporary pain is not worth it.
So when you get that far down, you know, someone said something to me before and they said that I was in a dark place. I didn't realize what they meant when they said they were in a dark place. So it means different things to different people. To me at that time, I'm in a dark place meant that, you know, I might have lost my job or, you know, I was in a relationship with someone and it didn't work out, you know, and so I'm hurting. So to me, that dark place was something temporary, you know what I mean? And so when the lady pointed out that she was in a dark place, she was talking about something else. And so I was like, well, the guy told her that he was just going to pray for her. She was talking to this guy and I didn't see nothing wrong with that, you know? And so I expressed to her, I was like, well, that's good. I mean, if a person can't help you, all they can do is pray for you.
Right.
At that point. Yeah. Well, she got angry because she was thinking in her mind, her dark place was I'm suicidal. And she never said those words. So I didn't put two and two together. Mm. You know what I mean? So how do you filter? I said all that to say, how do you filter when you're talking to someone like a young kid come up to you or a teenager come up to you and they can relate to what you're saying and what you've been through? How do you figure out, are they really, really in that type of dark place? Or are they in just a dark place because my parents are strict and I just, you know,
I've had a few kids come up to me, young adults, and they, what means the most to me is apparently I'm the type of guy that everybody's comfortable talking to for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm an unlicensed therapist. That's what I am. So it's just like, I've had them come up to me, hey, I feel more comfortable talking to you than I do my own parents. Because unfortunately, parents are extremely judgmental, and they feel like when their kid comes in to talk, oh, you're overdramatic, or you're overreacting. Well, how do you actually know what that kid's going through?
Right.
Maybe you're contributing to it. So one thing my mom told me that I did not understand until I got older is you got to know the difference between what's real and what you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And half the stuff in life is just feelings. It's not what it is.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, you got to kind of differentiate what is actually happening and what's not happening. So everything you're feeling inside is temporary. It's not permanent, because the stuff you're going through right now, it can all change.
Right.
So
right.
If you take – so I told this one kid in particular – he wanted to be in the UFC, which I'll get that in a second. I'm like, well, if you take yourself out, how are you going to get there? How are you going to make that $1 million? How are you going to buy a house? How are you going to have a family if you kill yourself? He's like, man, I can't take it. And he was like, what do you mean? Well, I said, well, what's contributing to the way you feel? Like, people making fun of me. My girlfriend dumped me. I feel like I had no support. I said, then change your support system.
Mm-hmm.
Change the people you date and change the people you hang around with. Even if you have to be by yourself, you do what you have to protect your thing. Because the biggest thing, as a motivational speaker that I cover, that I think is more important than anything, is your mental health.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got people
y'all hear that, right?
You got people, they get on Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, and shout, oh, I'm depressed. Some of those people do that for attention.
Yeah.
Then the people that are actually hurting, you don't know because they don't tell you. See, me, I've had PTSD since I've been about 13. This is on air, so I'm going to say something that was not in the biography. I was against therapy because mm-hmm. when I was 14, the therapist I was going to ended up took liberties with me. So that's kind of when he did get fired. So then I was really scared to open up to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I found the gym. So when I was pissed off, ready to punch someone's light out, maybe drink alcohol,
mm-hmm.
I hit the gym. And that kind of helped me balance out everything that was going on in my life. It made me, okay, I never had this confidence. The one thing I didn't have as a kid was confidence.
Yeah.
So hitting the gym helped me get that confidence. So now I'm sitting there, I'm like, damn, man, my arms are getting big. And I feel like I can beat somebody else.
Start feeling good.
Yeah, and then I got addicted to it. That's kind of how I got my – so anytime I get pissed off or down, because I still have my episodes from time to time, I go straight to the gym. I take a walk, or I help somebody else, and that kind of distracts me from what I'm going through.
Well, let me ask you, did you have any one particular person that was support to you other than your sister telling you to get out of town and come here? You have a male?
I had a few friends. I had a mentor that said, you might love the streets, but the streets ain't going to love you back. Mm-hmm. I said, you might not know your purpose now, but you'll find it. I was like, they don't know anything. They're old. What do they know?
Right.
I'm glad I took their advice, because I did get shot and I get stabbed. So it ain't like I got out the gang scots free. I had to pay the price. And I almost paid my life twice, you know, plus a suicide attempt. So I've cheated death a few times.
Wow.
And it was that third time, from the time I was maybe 10 to 14, I was not religious.
Mm-hmm.
Even though my adopted mom was Episcopalian, which is a form of Christianity, it's like old school for English people.
Mm-hmm.
Not somewhere I wanted to be. But it says that was her religion. That's what she believed in. She made me go to choir, and I can't sing for shit. So I'm like, Mom, what are you doing? We're supposed to be we're supposed to be attracting people to the church, not pushing them away. And it pushed them away with my singing. You know, I'm a terrible singer, but I'm a good songwriter. Mm-hmm. So it's like between that. And then, you know, I started losing my faith because of the priest and what he did.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, when I got stabbed in the stomach, Nazis did that to me. So they got me from my stomach, my belly button out.
Wow.
I had an out-of-body experience. That's when my faith got restored. And I was like, okay, I'm here for a reason. And ever since that experience, I've been able to feel energy. I don't consider myself a psychic, but I feel like I can definitely read someone's intentions before they even talk to me.
Wow. So let me ask you this. So let's go back to your out of body experience. What was that like?
Oh, man. The first thing, I remember having six massive guys like stomp my face in. One of them stabbed me with a small knife, and I was still fighting. until three other guys came behind me and pretty much hog tied me. This one guy had a, it was almost like a bear knife. It was a long knife. And he pretty much went like that and ripped my stomach open. I could not breathe. I couldn't talk. Blood was flowing my lungs. I was choking my own blood. Last thing I remember was looking down and my insides were hanging out. And I saw steam and then black. Then I was floating above my body. I felt really hot, then really cold, then I felt numb. So I saw three flashes. The first flash was gold streaks, my mom's face. I saw angels like floating and singing. And the second flash was nothing. The third flash was a putrid sulfur-like smell. Scream, like demonic screaming, flames. I remember seeing like these demonic worms with human heads. I remember seeing Hitler's face, and I saw this most ugliest, scariest, I'm pretty sure it was Satan, because he was in human form, but he had horns, a long tongue, and sharp teeth, and he was just smiling at me.
Like, I'm going to get you.
Like, come home.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck? I remember, I don't know how I said, what the fuck am I doing here? I saw a fifth flash, and then I woke up, and there was about 11 guys in the hospital saying, he should not be alive. Then I looked down and I see about, I'd say there's about 50 staples in my stomach. I was in the hospital for about 3 months.
Wow. So you were in a hospital. Were you, when you went into the hospital, you were unconscious.
I was DOA.
Yeah.
I was dead on arrival. And they brought me back. So I died twice in the ambulance and once on the table. So I died three times.
That's amazing. Wow.
And I was so small that the staples wouldn't hold. So what that means, I got MRSA. MRSA is very dangerous. So that's actually what my mom, my foster mom died from. She died from MRSA. So I got MRSA and I went from 140 to 115 in 3 months. And then my stupid ass, when I got discharged, went straight back to the streets and then I got hit with the drive-by. So it's like I didn't learn my lesson.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to get all, I don't remember their names, I remember their faces. I'm going to get all six of them back.
If that's the and last these thing. Were people that was on your team.
The ones that stabbed me?
Uh-huh.
No, those were Nazis.
Oh,
that was strictly race. I got shot by the block over to me, which were ops. But the Nazis tried to kill me because I was black. And I remember that one spat on me and called me the N-word like repeatedly. And I was like, I'm going to get you motherfuckers, every single one of you. And I was like, you know what? If I do, I'm spending the rest of my life in prison. And I probably am going to go to where that place I saw. So I'm going to let karma get them. And karma got them all.
Wow.
And even though I was like, I got to get out of here. Like, so then I moved to Virginia. I did go to therapy because I was trying to, like, forget everything I've been through, which is impossible. Right. You can't do it. So
yeah.
I was like, I need to just restart my life over. I changed who I was hanging around with, my mental state. And that's the rest of the history. Then I started training in wrestling. I was 18 when I started wrestling. 19, I got Rookie of the Year. 20, I started traveling.
Wow.
25, I got signed by WWE. They fired me a year later because of COVID. And then I went to AEW, wrestled there for a year. Then they let me go from there. And then ever since I was 27, I've been doing independent wrestling.
Wow. So we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and learn about wrestling and what's all this cool stuff on your belt mean. That sound good?
Yeah.
All right. Okay, if you just tune in, you haven't tuned in too late. You tuned in to the Cammy Grayson Show, and I have Mr. Irvin Legend
yes,
here with me today, and he's sharing some remarkable, remarkable things that he's been through in his life. And it's just amazing that he's been through all that he's gone through, and he's still standing, and he still has a positive attitude, and he's still trying to help other people and make it happen. And so I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
Just say that for the record to the world, you know, all the things that you've done. So now we'll talk about something fun now. Let's talk about something fun. So this beautiful belt sitting in front of me, I've only ever seen one in person, which was a boxing belt that belonged to my dad. So explain all this bling bling and what this is. It says champion. And so what is this?
This is the R1W Multimedia Heavyweight Championship. You got R1W Heavyweight, and then the Multimedia was the secondary. So I held the Heavyweight Championship. Mm-hmm. I relinquished it, and they had a tournament for it, and somebody else won it. Because I held the title for about a year and a half, and I was like, I'm done with that. I want something new. We had what you call a coronation, which is when a new belt is involved in the promotion. They give it to the, you know, current or past champion. So that was me. So they awarded me with the R1W Multimedia Heavyweight Championship. Now, when I first got this belt, I'm like, what the hell? Why did you put multimedia in the championship? But then what it symbolizes is, in the world of professional wrestling, social media is extremely important. It's what makes you money.
Okay.
So whenever you hear of R1W on Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, I'm pretty much implying that I'm a champion of anything that has to do with social media. So they're depending on me for views, ticket sales, stuff like that.
Okay. So you're more like an influencer when it comes to that. Okay. So that explains why I see TikTok here and I see Facebook over there. And then what's this back here? YouTube
and Instagram.
And Instagram.
They're counting on me to do all the interviews, all the press conferences. That's my job. And kicking somebody's ass in the ring. Heavyweight champion, he just travels and does his thing. I travel and promote. You know, more promote in a fight. So I technically have more of a demanding job.
Okay.
Because they're counting on me to sell tickets, to get R1W, like, you know, out there.
Got you. Now, so you were the champion. Tell us about the boxing career. How did that work?
Boxing.
Wrestling. I'm sorry.
So my first year was.
But you boxed too, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not as long as wrestling. But I did train at Sweet Piece Medical School in Norfolk.
Got you.
For about 6 months. Then I went to Vegas, trained with Mayweather. So I got trained by two different guys. By the time I came back to Norfolk, I heard Sweet Pea got killed by that. I think he got hit by a car. So now his son's running, and I haven't been back since. I haven't been back in a while. I might drop by there. So
yeah.
I think Keyshawn came from, he might have came from Golden Gloves.
Okay.
I know he's from Norfolk, but I forgot who he trained. Where he might have trained out in Vegas. I'm not too sure. But
well, I know the Olympics was his main thing.
Right. That's where he got a gold medalist from there.
Yeah.
So I think me and Keyshawn. Keyshawn's one of the very few boxers to come from Norfolk.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Keyshawn. And then I'm probably the only professional wrestler from this area.
Gotcha.
So that's
why. Yeah, I haven't seen any wrestlers here. Boxing was, you know, Dorset had a gym. And, of course, I'm attracted to it because of, you know, my upbringing. But, yeah, I haven't seen any wrestlers here.
That's why I grind so hard, because Virginia has so many talented people. We don't get enough credit. So that's why I work three times harder than anybody else, because I want people to say, okay, athletes do come from Virginia. It's not just Texas, Carolina. Florida is overpopulated. So, I mean, you got Keyshawn. I mean, you got myself. Not, he's not an athlete. You got Pharrell. You got Missy Elliott. You got your Virginia.
Right.
You know, I also found out that I might be getting putting the Virginia Legends down by the beach.
Nice.
So that's cool.
Yeah. So let's talk about your journey being a wrestler, though. So, you know, how did you start? I know you started to build your muscles and things like that, but how did you actually get into wrestling, and when did you decide that this is the way to go?
So actually, me and my friends, I was a nerd. I'm not going to lie. When I was 18, I was the biggest wrestling fan in the world. Like, I had oversized t-shirts. Didn't care if it was an XL, 2XL, I'm wearing it. Didn't care if it dropped below my knees. I'm rocking with it. Me and my homies always go to Buffalo Wild Wings because they have free pay-per-views. I didn't have the money to pay $60 for pay-per-view. So I traveled. Well, I didn't really travel. I drove 15, 20 minutes down the road to go eat some hot wings, chicken wings, whatever, cheeseburgers, and watch the show.
Mm-hmm.
There was a smaller local fed that came in and tried to promote their show on top of WWE, and I was like, that's so stupid. Why are you putting your minor league cards on the table. Like, anybody gives a crap about your little dingy promotion when you got WB song on national television. Mm-hmm. But then it clicked. I'm like, he's promoting. Why would you spend $120 to watch WB when you can pay $25 and watch local talent? So mm-hmm. then I walked up to him. I said, hey, man, do you train? He's like, yeah. But he had this smile on his face. Like, who the hell is this kid? He's small.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I was like, how much would it be? $250 a month. He told him $250 a month. I had a heart attack. I'm like, I can't afford that. Yeah. So one of the wrestlers took a liking to me. His name is Curtis Mack. So he's like, hey, man, sit at the table with us. I'm like, me? You want me to sit at the table? So I sat at the table with him. We all chopped it up. He's like, I'm going to try to get you in. Like, you can't afford $250. We'll talk. He calls my sister. He goes, do you mind if I train Irvin? And my sister wanted to kill that man because he's like, that's a dangerous sport. Next week, he picked me up because my car wasn't working at the time. Took me to the training facility. I hit the mat one time. I'm like, damn, this shit hurts.
Yeah.
This don't tickle. But I fell in love. And then what I did was he's like, well, you have to pay tuition if you want to train. So I didn't pay tuition. I mopped the floors and cleaned the toilets for a year in exchange for free training.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I got my start. And then I outworked everybody. Then I started doing bodybuilding, put some size on. Now, what everybody knows in professional wrestling, there are drugs involved.
Mm-hmm.
There are PEDs involved. There's painkillers and alcohol. The reason why a lot of the guys take that is because this stuff hurts. And the higher up you go on the ladder, the more they depend on you to perform. So sometimes you got to do this 3 times a week.
Oh, no.
And you were hurting from the last show. That's why a lot of you guys take alcohol, painkillers, and steroids. So there was a point in time in my career where I did all three. So I wouldn't change them for nothing, but it's a very dangerous.
Right. So it's kind of like you leave one world doing all the other stuff to another world to try to better yourself, but it still puts you in the dangerous stuff. Yeah.
So now I have PTSD from my past. I don't trust nobody. I don't trust when someone walks up, Irvin, I want to help you. Who the hell are you?
Mm-hmm.
What is your intention? Why are you talking to me?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm successful, you're going to cheer me on, or you're going to stab me in the back.
Right.
So I had to overcome that fear. I had stage fright, which in wrestling, there's no room for that. You have to cut promos. You have to be in front of a camera. You have to work in front of people, wrestle. So my biggest issue was overcoming stage fright and just not being like awkward, socially mm-hmm. awkward. So then I start traveling. All these guys are bigger than me. I'm like, damn, I wish I was that big.
Right.
That's when I get hooked on steroids.
No.
I had a veteran there who I not name on the air. He's like, hey, kid, try this. You'll put on size, eat PB&Js and drink milk. Do your push-ups, go to the gym. Don't drink. I'm like, how do you do it? He's like, here's some needles. That's how much you take. Put it in the glute 2 times a week. I did that. Put on like 20 pounds. I was like, damn. This is like a miracle. But then here comes the anger and the mood swings. Like, what's happening?
Yeah.
So then I started bodybuilding. Once I got my little frame, I was like, okay, now I'm going to keep taking more and more and more. At this point, I hurt my back. I had lumbar pain. So then I started taking painkillers. So I would travel to these shows and take 10 Percocets, 5 Vicodins, whatever I can get my hands on, muscle relaxers, somas, mm-hmm. and I drink. One time, I overdosed in the hallway. I didn't realize I took that much. Somebody found me, called police. Ambulance came, took me away. They named it an accidental overdose.
Mm-hmm.
This is the time I was in Derby. They pay for your rehab. So I went through rehab, I passed. Then I had to go rehab again for alcohol. That's a separate issue. But I drank alcohol because I couldn't keep relationship. I was still having a lot of mental stuff from my upbringing. Like, so it was from the time I was 23, 25, I went through all that. Couldn't hold a steady job, couldn't hold a steady relationship. And now I'm going through stuff that I'm not used to. I've always been a ladies' man, but the amount of women that was throwing themselves at me was overwhelming, and I thought I was invincible. Like, don't take this the wrong way. There's a point in my career where I was having multiple women on a weekly basis. I'm like, damn, this is the rock star lifestyle. But with that comes issues.
Okay.
Because with being social media, being an athlete, some of these people ain't nice.
Mm-hmm.
A few try to defame my character, my name, my reputation. This is why I tell everybody who wants to be a professional anything. Have a lawyer,
mm-hmm.
multiple lawyers, trademark lawyer, and a legal lawyer, because you never know who's going to come for your money.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go to court at least a handful of times over false allegations that weren't true. And that's a big thing in today's society. Everybody likes to do that for whatever reason. Yeah. But I was like, damn, I'm getting multiple different women a weekly basis, different towns. This is amazing. Got to be healthy too. Like, you got to get checked. Got to be, got to protect yourself. Right. Then drugs were involved. We went to parties. There was cocaine. I hate cocaine. Didn't go to parties after that. Because once I saw that cocaine, I started freaking out. I was like, I can't be around this.
Yeah.
So it's, the pro wrestling lifestyle is not as jolly as it seems. There's a dark side to it. There's a reason why a lot of these guys die before they're 50. Because the drugs, the suicides, that was another thing I was battling. I was like, damn, I'll never get signed to WWE. I might as well just like end it. So I did try to hang myself at another point in my career when I got fired. So like, it's been a roller coaster. Wow. And now I'm at the tail end of my career. I'm happy. I'm confined with it. You know, I'm content. I bought my house off with it, fighting. So I've done everything I want to do, really. And now I'm getting ready to train people probably in a few months.
So you're going to open up your own wrestling gym?
Probably either in Norfolk or Virginia Beach, or maybe on the border. So I'm trying to figure out what the best area would be to open up a wrestling school. I know a lot of the young kids in Norfolk need something to do. They're always around gun violence, so I'm thinking maybe Norfolk might be a better choice.
Yeah. Well, it is a better choice for the inner city children, but you have to also think about the kids that are not in inner city that still need help. You know that, what I mean?
Norfolk can be a little dangerous.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, they got, I guess they have everything is what I'm trying to say already. And so you don't, you kind of want to reach a new clientele that's not,
right.
I mean, and if it's good, it's worth driving, right?
If it's good. I was thinking either Virginia Beach, Norfolk, or Chesapeake.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, that's my.
But I'm excited for you, though. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, me too. I had a wrestling school in Baltimore, but I'm having to drive there every week was a lot of gas. Shut it down.
Wow. I love it. So tell people how they can get in contact with you.
You can get in contact with me on Urban Legend on Facebook, Official Urban Legend on my Instagram, Urban Legend 757 on my Twitter, and TikTok is Urban Legend.
Nice. So, Mr. Legend, before we leave, can you give us some words of wisdom?
Words of wisdom would be when nobody believes in you, believe in yourself. Don't let anybody tell you you can't be anything. You can be anything you want to be. And just start to really envision where you want to be in the next 5, 10, 15 years, and then just act on it. If you have any distractions in your life, whether it be women, men, friends, I would honestly say put them second. Because no one's going to get you the way you want to go except for yourself. So it's okay to be selfish sometimes if you know you're going to turn it into something positive, but don't be selfish and be ignorant.
That's right.
You know, so you gotta navigate, because you know, the big man upstairs ain't gonna throw so much you can't handle. You just gotta accept it and move on.
I love it. Absolutely love it. Well, guys, our time is up, and we want to thank you for joining us. And Mr. Legend, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Okay, guys, until next time, SKST Radio. Bye for now.